Today's sponsor is Travis Zippo. He bought me a large iced coffee on buymeacoffee.com. Thank you. We'll talk about that on the back end of the show because you want to hear late night jokes. Stephen Colbert explained the inauguration used to be on March 4th, which according to Q-spiracy theorists was the day the former president of the United States would be restored to the presidency. That did not happen, but he was restored as a customer of the month at the Palm Beach KFC / Taco Bell. Kimmel, I never thought I'd say this, but I'm starting not to trust my QAnon message boards. Kimmel, these conspiracy aficionados picked the date March 4th because it's the date I just explained that. It's also the anniversary of the first People's Choice Awards. And by the way, the people chose Joe Biden. So I don't know. Just get off the queue and call your children. They're worried about you. Colbert, again, come on, QBs. Remember what Einstein said? The definition of insanity is doing the same thing over and over but expecting different results. Also, QAnon, these people are effing crazy. Colbert, now, were these plans ever real? Who knows? But out of an abundance of caution, the House canceled the legislative session. It's kind of like a domestic terrorism snow day in that they're both dangerous and white. Very funny. When the Senate did get back to work, Senator Ron Johnson held up the new stimulus bill. He demanded clerks read all 628 pages out loud. Jimmy Fallon said, that means for 10 hours, Ted Cruz was not the most hated senator in Congress. That's great. Fallon, to make it feel even longer, Johnson hired Gilbert Gottfried to do the reading. Seth, you think that's going to be a deterrent? We've all been in quarantine for a year. I've done things that are a lot less exciting than listening to a bill get read for 10 hours. Colbert, that takes guts. Reminds me of the classic film, Mr. Smith Forces Senate Clerks to Go to Washington. Colbert, perhaps it's just Ron Johnson's way of telling us he can't read. It's nothing to be ashamed of, Senator. We're sending in LeVar Burton. James Corden said the 600-page bill will be read aloud in the Senate for 10 hours. This is the political equivalent of making someone come to your improv show. Corden, I'm going to wait until it's adapted on Netflix. I'll watch it then. You know, Trevor, to all the hungry kids out there, be patient. Ron Johnson is making a symbolic point. You can eat tomorrow or next week, whatever. Fallon, the only thing more built up than this bill is Oprah's interview with Meghan Markle. Oh, I can't wait for that tonight. Are you going to watch this thing? I can't wait. I've mentioned on the side, I am the writer for a podcast called Palace Intrigue, and I'll do a plug here. Palace Intrigue, it's like daily comedy news, except I don't voice it because I sound from Queens. So Mark Francis is the voice of the show. I write the copy, and it's about the royal family. So if you like The Crown, or if you just like seeing princesses and princes fight amongst each other, Palace Intrigue is the podcast for you. We do that one 5 days a week, and the episodes are like 5-6 minutes long. It's a lot like this, except minus comedy plus royal family. But we cannot wait. We did bonus episodes this weekend because this Oprah thing tonight is huge. Like, royal family-wise, this is the Super Bowl. This is WrestleMania. We cannot wait. Meghan Markle with Oprah Winfrey. So if all this floats your boat, that podcast is called Palace Intrigue, wherever you get your shows. Oh, I've got more late night for you. Samantha Bee talked about Andrew Cuomo. He's the New York State governor being accused of hitting on women, Sam said. Looks like Andrew Cuomo is the biggest dirtbag New Yorkers have elected since pretty much every previous dirtbag we've elected. Guess we have a type. Cuomo seems like the kind of guy who thinks it can't be sexual harassment if he didn't use the word toots. Back in 2020, we were so desperate for a leader who wouldn't tell us to go bleach ourselves, we turned our governor into a hero. She pointed to media fawning over the governor's competent coronavirus briefings, for which figures such as Ellen called themselves Cuomo-sexuals. James Acaster has released his new special on Vimeo, available now. Vulture writes, in January, a clip went viral of a comedian calling out Ricky Gervais for his transphobic material. That clip, edgy comedians, no one tells them what they can and can't say. They walk straight on stage, top of their specials at times, do 10 solid minutes just slagging off transgendered people, just straight out of the gate. And if people on the internet get upset about it, the comedian's always like, bad luck, that's my job, I'm a stand-up comedian. What's the matter, guys? Too challenging for you? Ah, yeah, because you know who's been long overdue for challenge? The trans community. Oh, they've let their guard down for too long, if you ask me. That clip has been viewed over a million times, and it is part of the special by James Acaster. Again, that special is on Vimeo. Vulture writes, his comedy style is eclectic and experimental. It features act-outs, props, and long stories, in addition to crowd work and one-liners. He's playful yet cagey and keeps the audience at arm's length. Here's one of the jokes. Favorite number? Umpteen. It's a curious number because it sounds big, but it's in the teens. That's a good joke. The special's called Cold Lasagna. It's 2 hours long, split down the middle by a 20-minute intermission. So what do I do? Do I just, like, let my TV play for 20 minutes while there's nothing on the screen? Can I fast forward? But 2 hours is a long time. And if that's not enough, Acaster is releasing an additional 40-minute bonus show on Vimeo. Yikes. Are you watching Ted Lasso yet? You should turn this podcast off and go watch Ted Lasso right now. As I've mentioned, it was the greatest thing of 2020. I don't mean comedy-wise. I just mean of anything that happened 2020, Ted Lasso was number one. Variety reports Sarah Niles will join the cast for season two. Niles will play Sharon. Sharon is a sports psychologist who's been brought in to work with the AFC Richmond team. I'm looking forward to season two of Ted Lasso. Already picked up for season three, but it may be three seasons and out. I hope not. That one should go like 20 seasons. If you bounce on over to Instagram at some point today, I will post next week's Top Dog matchup so you can get a sneak peek on that. I'll announce it on the podcast tomorrow. This week's matchup was, and voting is closed, John Mulaney and Bert Kreischer. Dragon Queen 221B commented, "This is a tough one, but I have to stick with Mulaney. I think we may know who wins there, but I'll let you know." Eddie Murphy spoke to the New York Times. "Yeah, we've still got stuff about Coming to America. Don't worry, there was plenty." Eddie said, "When we started doing comedy, there may have been like 10 black comics in all the country, so everybody knew each other. Comics are very cliquish. So when you get in a click with the people you think are funny, of the 10 black comics, there were 4 or 5 I never became friends with. When I came out here to L.A., I met Arsenio through Keenan Ivory weigh-ins. Arsenio said, 'Yeah, we're standing in front of the improv. Keenan introduces me. I shake Eddie's hand and we talk for a while. And then coming down the street is Damon weigh-ins. I'd never met him. Keenan introduces us to Damon. And he's doing that character that Eddie let him do eventually in Beverly Hills Cop, the hotel guy. It was so convincing. I didn't laugh because I didn't know whether it was real. That's how he got the role in Cop 1. The Times asked Eddie, 'What got you interested in the idea of seeing America and New York through the eyes of this African prince, Akeem?' Eddie said, 'That was at the height of when I first got into the business. I was on tour and just broke up with a girlfriend, and a conversation started on the tour bus about me wanting to meet a girl that didn't know I was this dude and just like me for me.' The Times brought up that at that point, Arsenio's only movie credit was a comedy sketch in Amazon Women on the Moon. Arsenio said, 'It's funny, I was not a movie star. I was a stand-up comic.' Eddie said, No. He also did an episode of Love American Style. He's with a Soul Train dancer named Demita Jo Freeman, and they play a couple. I've looked all over. I looked on YouTube, but I can't find it. We were friends, and I like to be with some other comedians and make it as funny as it can be. There's me and Richard Pryor in Harlem Nights. That's me and Arsenio, me and Martin Lawrence in Life. I'm not going to be shouldering this stuff by myself." Eddie, what took you so long to make a sequel to Coming to America? Eddie said, "We never thought about doing a sequel. The way the story ended was kind of like, and they lived happily ever after. Then all this time passed and the movie became this cult thing. Catchphrases from the movie started working their way into culture, stores turning themselves into McDowell's. I have seen a few reviews of it. It seems mixed." Variety wrote, "Coming to America review, Eddie Murphy sequel feels more like low-key remake." Uh-oh. "For the most part, Coming to America falls back on familiar punchlines, serving up nearly word-for-word repeats of amusing bits from the original, but they don't necessarily play the same in this context. Take McDowell's, for example, out of Queens, and the underlying parody loses its relevance, although it is amusing to see a black clown Ronald McDowell mascot at the Zamunda joint. The Play It Safe sequel risks diminishing what this fantasy kingdom represents." It's Sunday, so that's a Matt Berry Sunday. Vulture's been writing these great articles about Matt Berry. Who's Matt Berry? He's the British vampire in What We Do in the Shadows. He's the boss in season 2 and beyond of the It Crowd, the IT Crowd, which you should be watching. He is the star of Toast of London, which you should be watching. Vulture writes, "For my money, the best spot gig on TV is a judge. There are a few different flavors, the straight-up police procedural, the more cable-y court thriller, the legal drama. In each one, the judge holds a special and delightful place. They get to wear big, voluminous black robes, often with a jaunty collar situation." That sounds like something that Stephen Toast should read. "The judge gets to sit literally higher than everyone else, looking down on them from a position of power. Best of all, the judge character is always a glorious combination of extreme reserve and obvious quirkiness. They are figures who command respect and who are supposed to be these higher order beings of impartial justice, but in practice, every line they say becomes a reflection of who this person is. You know where this is heading. There is no one better suited to that position than Matt Berry." Vulture says, "Think about how great he'd look in the robe. He'd walk into the courtroom and nod officiously at the bailiff. The robe would swish around him with an air of impressive spectacle. Think about the pleated shoulders. Outside of the few fairly prescribed lines a judge has available to them, sustained. Most of the characters built with a face and hands. They have the eyebrow quirk, the furrowed forehead, the squinted eye of skepticism, the raised brow of surprise, and in extreme moments, the rapid tapping of a gavel. Barry has a vital asset that makes him perfect for this kind of work. He has fantastic eyebrows. They are mobile, eloquent brows. And they could do such extraordinary work when framed by a jet black judge's robe and a gleaming wood paneled background. Of course, you can't forget the importance of a voice in a situation like this. And here's where Barry is really head and shoulders above the competition. He's good at projecting. He's a fantastic enunciator. And given the stringent limitations of a judge's role, you need someone who can take a one-word line and really make the most of it. No one has more ability to take a single word and imbue it with untold layers of nuance and personality than Matt Barry. Oh, there are several paragraphs more, but I will save that for next Sunday's Matt Barry Sunday. From Broadway World, comedy producers are searching for America's funniest women in stand-up comedy, storytelling, and video shorts to take place in the Ladies of Laughter National Comedy Contest for cash prizes, comedy bookings, and the 2021 Ladies of Laughter title. This happens virtually on May 7th, May 14th, and May 19th. $500 cash prizes, baby. If you would like to enter the Ladies of Laughter competition, go to ladiesoflaughter.org. Contestants are urged to apply early. Much thanks to Travis Zippo. He paid for this iced coffee. I've been drinking it for several hours while recording stuff before I recorded today's podcast. I recorded this week's show I do on Live by Live. Let me plug that. So what's that? I do a lot of things. That's kind of like this, except I play bits. So if I tell a story about Jim Gaffigan, I play a bit by Jim Gaffigan. It's called the Weekly Comedy Thing. You'll find it on the Live by Live app, Live X Live. It is free. There are also several streaming comedy radio stations on there that I program. So if you want to hear some stand-up, bounce on over to the Live by Live app, and I'll recommend today's comedy. And if you like what I do here, you can buy me a coffee at buymeacoffee.com/dailycomedynews. Thank you, Travis Zippo. Everybody, if you don't already, please follow the show on Spotify or subscribe on Apple Podcast, wherever you get your shows. See you tomorrow.